You're listening to Air Candy, an uninhibited exploration of topics, ideas, and stories.
And
Hey man, let me run this show. I want to do this one.
All right.
You ready? Oh shoot, we're already recording. Oh. Hey.
Hi guys. Hello friends, and welcome back to Air Candy, where we like to talk about all sorts of topics ranging from serious to ridiculous while sharing our unprofessional opinions and advice. I'm your humble host, Colleen, and with me as always is my co-host, Seth.
I'm steering the wheel.
Today we're going to be talking about death rituals, aka Seth's show about dead stuff.
Seth's show.
But before we get into that, new episodes of Air Candy will be coming to you every other Thursday. If you haven't already liked and subscribed to our show, please do so wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss out on any future episodes. If you want to connect with us online, you can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Air Candy Podcast. If you have a question, comment, or episode idea, you can drop us a line on one of the socials or send an email to aircandypodcast@gmail.com, and either Seth or I will get back to you as soon as possible. So hit us up. And with all that out of the way, let's get into it. So you're telling me you want to be in control?
Yeah, why not? You're always the front runner here. Let me try a little something here, if you don't mind.
So you basically want to try out being the lead, is what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. Let me just try to be the
lead. Because you're
on
planning
this one.
On leaving me and starting your own podcast? Is that secretly your agenda?
Maybe.
I knew it.
It is not. You're with me for life till death.
Yeah, there we go. It fits right in with this theme.
Exactly. So let me see if I can make our listeners as happy as you make them. How about that? Is that okay?
Sure.
Now, look, listeners, don't worry. I'm not going to go off the rails. It's still going to be the same. I just want to kind of steer the candy car for a little bit. That's all.
It'll be a little bit different because I'm not coming into this heavily prepared and researched like I normally do.
Yeah, and we're going to have a lot of good times, a lot of fun. It's going to be still just as fun as all the other Air Candy episodes that we have. So
Okay. So I have a little bit of bum wine. I'm willing to relinquish control today. So the ship is yours.
Thank you very much. Okay. So, speaking of till death, so in case you live under a rock, if you don't know what death is, we got to do my thing. As we always do every single episode, we're going to talk about what the definitions are. All right. So, first definition, we're going to go to good old Webster's. We all know what that's about. All right. Webster's, the observances held for a dead person, usually before burial or cremation. Dictionary.com, the ceremonies for a dead person prior to burial or cremation. I'm not sure what this word is. Obsequies? A-O-B-S-E-Q-U-I-E-S. Obsequies? I gotta look
so
up.
Excuse me?
Yeah. Excuse me?
I don't know what you're talking about.
I know. I gotta look up a diction. I gotta look up the word inside the own dictionary thing. Okay. So that's that. All right. So, Wiki. A funeral is a ceremony connected with the final disposition of a corpse, such as a burial or cremation, with the attendant observances. Funerary customs comprise the complex of beliefs and practices used by a culture to remember and respect the dead, from interment to various monuments, prayers, and rituals undertaken in their honor. Customs vary between cultures and religious groups. Okay, so just by going by that, you know what? All of us like to hate on Wikipedia. Shout out to Wikipedia on this one. They really kind of, they knocked it out the park. Dictionary.com, y'all can kick rocks. Webster's, you guys did all right.
Don't be hating because you just don't know one word.
I know what I'm saying, but Wiki, you know, they kind of came through. They gave us a nice definition. You know, it's all good.
Well-rounded.
So, yeah, it's well-rounded. Tells you everything. So both of me and you have been around funerals, you know, to say the least. So tell us, what's your experience when it comes to funerals?
My experience, I hate them. I don't like them. Okay. I've been to far too many to count.
Yeah, same here. I've been to a lot. And being a young person, you know, I've been to more than I really care to even remember, quite honestly. It was, of course, you remember almost every funeral that you go to, right? Mm-hmm. But you think at our age, oh, yeah, I've been to 2, 3. I mean, I would bet that me and you've probably been to 10-plus funerals. And I'm 44. That's a lot of
Yeah,
funerals,
I've been to a ton. And I was raised by my grandparents, so they were already at that age where they were losing friends. So I was kind of, like, dragged along to a bunch of funerals, even at an early age. So,
yeah,
like, a really early age.
Yeah, and I went to funerals when I was really young. I got some remembrance of some, but, you know, just to give you guys a heads up, listeners, it's not going to be a sad episode. We're just going to talk about...
add the violins.
Yeah, we're not going to add the violin music and things like that. We're just talking about our own experiences first, and then we're going to get into, you know, how Wikipedia really gave us a great definition about what people do and the rituals and so on and so forth. So, you know, if you're feeling like this is going to be a sad one, don't click away. We're still on a point. It's going to be fun, and we're going to have a good time. So both of us, yes, we've had a lot of experiences when it comes to death, but you and I both live in the United States of America. So we are used to certain kinds of rituals, so to speak, or the way that funerals happen.
Mm-hmm,
all right.
Sure.
So the typical thing that happens when it comes to funerals, let's go down like the very basics. So you have a viewing, you have a burial, you have a cremation, you got the repast. Those are the things that typically happen. Of course, there's some variations. You know, I'm not talking about the special music and things like that. We're talking about like the basics of it. So the
first
one.
You're talking about the bare bones of what we do in Western culture.
Exactly. We're going with just the bare bones. So the first one, the viewing. So typically, viewing happens the same day as the funeral, typically an hour before. Of course, there's variations. Sometimes it's just the family first viewing, and then for friends and family after that. Well, yeah, other parts of the family. Then after that, you go to the interment, which is also the burial, whichever way you want to call it. Another part of it, even after you have that, there's the cremation part. So those are the ones that were typically around. Now, I have a fun fact about cremation in general. So in 2020, an all-time high number of Americans chose cremation over burial. So that's 56%. And that's according to the National Funeral Directors Association. And that percentage is projected to continue growing. So in some states, Nevada, Oregon, Washington, Hawaii, more than 70% of people chose cremation in 2020. The data shows 74.2% of Americans chose to actually do cremation. So it's only going up right now. And I'm not sure what that's attributed to.
I wonder
to.
If that has anything to do with the pandemic.
It could be. Maybe because you have to now. Well, I can't say have to. Maybe that's just because all the stressors that are around that.
I mean, I don't know for sure. I'm just learning this as you're telling me. But I'm just guessing that if they're talking about the data just from 2020, then perhaps that's something to do with the pandemic because people weren't able to gather and a lot of people were just getting their loved ones cremated and then saving some kind of ceremony or whatever for later.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that could have been it. Maybe there's just a different view on it because there's people always looking at other things and maybe death isn't just one of the things that maybe things are just into different light now. People are thinking differently about it. That's really what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
The last part about it is the repast. So this is something I kind of learned recently when I was doing research for this. So why is it called the repast? So repast, R-E-P-A-S-T. I thought it was repast with S-S, but I think it's called repast. So the word repast literally translates to eat. Mm. So this was a common Latin word for mealtime. So however, over the years, it's become associated with funerals. And now it's just a tradition for breaking bread symbolically as a family, as a passing of a loved one. So, you know, I've been to plenty of repasts and I always call it a repast. And I've actually even seen it in the credits. Not the credits.
The the brochure? Is that what you're getting at?
Bear with me. I see it in the credits, the obituary.
Oh, I'm thinking the brochure when you go in and you have the little...
The program. Yeah. Good night. It's terrible. So in the starting credits, so we have the actors.
Good night.
Yeah, so after that. So what about you? Do you stick around for the repass?
Always.
After the funeral and all that? No.
Always. If it's somebody that I knew, absolutely. And the reason is because I feel that whole time of sticking around and eating and, like you said, breaking bread together, it helps alleviate some of that grief just ever so slightly in that moment. And it's a time where people can share stories and just kind of commiserate together and laugh and cry and all of those things. But, you know, you don't really get a lot of chances to do that. It's almost like one of the only times you can do that with the whole group of people, friends, family, etc.
Yeah, totally agree. I feel the same. I typically stay after, depending on how well I know the person, because sometimes somebody I went to high school with or something like that, then I pay my respects. I go to the funeral. I go to the wake or the viewing, whichever we're calling it, the viewing right now, but
the worst thing ever.
So I do that, and then for the repast, yes, it's one of those times where you can just talk to the people, and actually, yeah, you have a good time. You break bread, you enjoy each other's company, and a lot of this time, what do we always talk about? It's like, you know, it's either funerals or weddings, the two times that you know you see people you haven't seen in a while, and also a high school reunion too. It's another
truly.
Thing too. So, and I typically stick around too. That's the one time you get a chance to celebrate someone's life. And that's what the repast is all about. You break bread and typically there's food. So that's how it's done in the West.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many times I've been to a repast and while we're there among each other, we're like, yeah, we need to get together more and let's do this again. And let's plan something, a bigger celebration for so-and-so. And then it never happens.
I was just going to say that.
It never happens. And it makes me sad. And it's just hard to organize that kind of thing because everybody's busy and whatnot. So if you don't stick around for the repast, you're going to miss out on the sharing and caring about that person.
That and also seeing others too, because the repast for me is kind of like celebrating life at the same time. And yes, there's the one thing that we didn't talk about. You know, you have these celebrations if someone gets cremated and not an actual funeral and blah, blah, blah. You know, you have that too. But sometimes you celebrate someone's life and you also get a chance to connect with people that are with you right now. You know, while you're eating, breaking bread and doing that, having a couple of drinks, you're crying, you're laughing and all that. So that's why I typically show up to all those things, depending on how I know the person. Because sometimes it's just it's just for family or sometimes it's for everybody. So, let's talk about some other cultures though, when it comes to eating. You know, we have in the West, Western culture, we like to eat, break bread, have good times, drink, be merry. Some of these cultures like to actually eat the dead.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
It just makes me think of that squirrel years ago.
Which dun, one's dun, that?
Dun. It was like a groundhog or a squirrel or something.
Oh.
With the eyes like.
Oh, yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
Eating the dead.
Eating the dead. So, yeah, endocannibalism. No, that's not a different type of weed for all you potheads out there. Don't try to get some of that endo-cannabis.
that dank endo, yo.
Try to get some of that endo-cannabis, y'all.
Oh, you mean endo-cannibalism. I don't want none of that.
And that. You know what this is? This is called death. You smoke this, you can't hear shit. Oh, man. So, let's define endo-cannibalism. All right. So, cannibalism is a Caribbean word that derives from the term Carib or Carib. The word was used first to describe a native tribe in Brazil named the Carib that participated in rituals where human meat was served. Okay.
Yuck.
Nasty. No thanks. Because they probably didn't have Old Bay back then. But anyway, so.
I put that shit on everything.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry,
and
that, Charlie.
And Frank's Red Hot.
Frank's Red Hot and Old Bay. Everybody would have died. Everybody would have ate everybody back in the day.
Sucking fingers.
sucking them, their own fingers and then sucking everybody else's fingers.
Right.
Look at them. That meat can rot the bone.
I can't.
All right, so there is a difference. So now we're talking about endocannibalism. All right, so we have endo and exocannibalism. So endo, which is what we are talking about, is within your family, and exo is outside the family. So
right, endo is within a particular culture or community or location.
Yep.
So it'd be like family, friends, your tribe, all that kind of thing.
And exo is, let's talk about the people, like the headhunters and things like that. If you think about cannibalism, the first thing that comes to mind with, you know, with us in the West, sometimes you think about the cannibalism and people that are the headhunters and things like that. That's what people would typically think about. Of course, there's other ways, unless you're a worldly person, that's probably what you would think about.
Mm-hmm.
So this tribe in New Guinea, so it's called the 4A tribe. So the women and children used to consume the males during one of these funerals. So specifically, the women, and hold on to your seats, folks. All right. So the women used to eat the brains of the brother and the hands and or the hands of her brother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these rituals, usually the reason why they did this because, you know, eating helped. You can take on the attributes of the dead. So our mind can go a lot of places with this. So if someone was good at building something, you eat this person's hands, and then you would be good at building something. And person was very smart. Okay, you eat their brains, and you would take on some of their worldly attributes when it comes to being smart at doing this, that, and the third.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I knew about that. I knew that in some cultures that particular parts of the body would, they believed, would pass on a particular trait or quality to the person who's consuming them. But yeah, it's important to remember that with endocannibalism, like, the ritual itself has to be sanctioned by the tribe leader or whoever. People aren't just going around doing that. It is a ritual that has to go through some steps.
Yeah, yeah. You go through those specific steps in those tribes. And
right.
And that's when you get these attributes that makes you more virtuous and more, you know, I mean, who knows? You're not going to eat the feet. I didn't read anything that talked about eating people's feet. I am a foot man, so if this gets popular in the West, I may have to bring on a new trend with a little bit of
old. I don't think it's ever going to get popular in the West, dude.
You don't think so?
I hope not. Right. No. I do know that this whole thing, as far as endo, is done out of respect.
Yep.
They also believed that through doing this ritual, that the body of their deceased loved one was then transformed into spirit. So by eating their loved ones, that was how they were able to, in their minds, confirm that the body was then transitioned and transformed into the spirit form. So it's almost not only just a sign of respect in their culture, but also a right to get that person who is deceased to the other side or wherever they believe that they are going.
And there's a lot of that when it comes to other cultures too.
Contrary to popular belief, ritualistic cannibalism doesn't always occur out of necessity or malice. So
yeah,
in many cultures, it's just the way to process the grief of losing a loved one. But with exocannibalism, it's a completely different story. Way different ballgame.
Yeah, so exocannibalism, and I didn't want to touch on that too much, but yeah, you're right. Exocannibalism is what goes bump in the night when it comes to mm-hmm. people like myself when we think about this. Exocannibalism is not a ritual. It may be a ritual, but it's more...
It is a ritual.
In more of, let's just say it's more malice.
Definitely. It's outside your social group, and it's
right.
more so eating your enemy.
Exactly.
But the one thing that remains the same, other than the fact that they're eating flesh, is that the person who's eating, they still, whether endo or exo, believe that they are absorbing or imbibing qualities of that dead person. So it could be wisdom, power, or like you mentioned, certain traits or whatever.
Exactly. So the headhunters and that, a lot of that stuff happened in, let's say, South America and other parts of the world too. But I'm just thinking about South America right now when you have the headhunters and they used to do that. And yes, if you would kill the chief or you go in and a high up person or a great warrior and you knew that you kill that warrior, you would eat that person. It wouldn't be in its entirety. I mean, let's not get it twisted here. You're not eating the whole person, but you're eating something of that person. Well, who knows? I'm like,
yeah, who knows? I mean, like, were you
there? Well, my great-grandfather used to be a headhunter, you know, so he used to eat that whole damn thing.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me when you come up with your stories about, you know, you have voodoo in your family, and I'm like, it wouldn't surprise me if you were like, oh, by the way.
By the way, I got an old foot from this. My great-grandfather, I know, you know, a statute of limitations, you know, I got it soaked in some bourbon.
Basically, the difference between the two, one is more respect and done in a loving way, I guess, if eating one can be considered loving, and the other one is more evil intent, like extinguishing
malice,
the existence of their enemy.
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
I'm extinguishing them one final time. Nom 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 nom.
Nom 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 nom. Obey.
Right. Pass the Franks, Red Hot.
Yeah, so that's the big difference, guys. If you want to look some of these up, we'll have some of these links in the show notes for you guys if you want to take a look at it after. Or if you want some more links, you want to hear something else from us, email us at aircandypodcast@gmail.com. So another offshoot that I want to talk about when it comes to cannibalism, it's not exactly humans eating, but it's up to animals eating. So let's take a little trip. Let's take a trip over to Tibet,
mm-hmm.
All right? One of my favorite places because... Isn't that where, what am I trying to say now? The mountain, the big mountain, Everest.
The big mountain.
The big mountain. Yeah, Everest. Yeah, Tibet. Those folks out there. So one of the things that they like to do, it's called the celestial or the sky burials over in Tibet. So after death, body is actually chopped up and it's left in the open air to be consumed. Now, this is actually the chosen method to over 85% of Tibetans to this day. Mm-hmm. So this isn't stuff that we're talking about back in the day, and we're not talking about 50, 60, 80 years ago. Like, to
no,
this day.
No, this is now, yeah.
Yep, right now, if you die and you live in Tibet, and you're up in the mountains, and you pass away, 85% of those folks out there choose to be chopped up and spread out in the open air. So what happens is you have the birds of prey, they come, birds of prey, and also the scavengers too, the buzzards and other scavengers out there, and they eat the person, they consume the person. So this isn't the people, these are actually animals.
So there's a whole sequence of events that has to take place for these types of burials. It's very steeped in tradition with the Tibetan people. And the reason they do this is because they believe that as soon as you die, your body is now an empty vessel. The spirit has gone, it's passed, it's getting ready for reincarnation, all of that along with their religious beliefs. And they believe that the humble and compassionate thing to do is to give your body back to the earth. So there's a whole sequence of events that includes leaving the body alone for a certain amount of days while lamas and monks pray over it and this, that, and the other. Then it eventually gets to the point where they take the body to the top of the mountain where a master of ceremonies, so to speak, will then do the other stuff, which is, like you mentioned, Seth, chopping
it up in little
pieces. And the thing is, the thing that they are trying to feed it to, it's not to all scavengers. They're specifically trying to feed the bearded vultures because in Tibetan culture, the bearded vultures are also called dakinis. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I think I am. But it also means sky dancers, and that's what they equate to angels.
Gotcha.
And they also believe that if the whole body is eaten, it's considered a very good sign. But it's a sign of bad luck or of one's mortal sins if the vultures don't devour the whole corpse. And if that happens, then that's when the masters of ceremony, and I'm doing air quotes because I really don't know what else to call them, that's when they will then call in different animals like wild dogs and things like that to come eat the rest of the corpse. So try to wrap your head around all that.
Yeah. All that being said, that yes, it is a ritual different than what we do in the United States. Let's just say that. We do it a little bit differently here, but... Mm-hmm.
And I will also say that I have seen a video of this. This is why I know about this. I've seen a video, and I will link it in the show notes. But viewer discretion, please, because it is not for the faint of heart. It is very graphic.
Ugh, no thanks. I'm good. Now, when it comes to all those things together, the whole ritual and everything, it's when it comes to Tibetans, everything is connected. Humans are connected to the planet, the earth, and everything mm-hmm. else too. So when, you know, the animals, you know, consume, and the angels, you know, that's all part of life cycle, because you are part of the earth. You're not,
yep.
The earth doesn't, you know, revolve around you. You're part of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And that just gives them the deeper connection when it comes to this kind of, yes, it may look horrible, but it's taken care of in a way that just makes the person just more part of the mm-hmm. whole cycle.
I'll say this, I'm a very squeamish person. And when I watched this video, I don't know, it's almost as if there was something very beautiful about it. I can't even describe it. And I'm not saying, oh, I want to do that, or I want to watch this all the time. No, it's just I saw it and I wasn't completely thinking to myself, hit stop. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't immediately turned off by it. I was kind of intrigued. And just the way that the whole thing was done.
Kind of like fascinating. You're just fascinated.
There's people singing, and it's just a very beautiful way that they handle it. It's very respectful, very beautiful the way that they do it. But again, viewer discretion advised. For real. But this whole thing, too, was, I think, born out of necessity, because you think over there, they don't have, you know, the
a
ground
lot of
is
space.
Frozen. Yeah, no space.
Right.
The ground might be frozen because of the elevation.
Exactly.
It's very rocky. They don't just have places to dig and bury. So stuff like cremation, I do know that they reserve that for high lamas and people in higher places.
And that's what, we have a lot of space in the United States, and a lot of places just don't have that kind of space. That's why a lot of cremation is the number one. So it's very surprisingly that, you know, our numbers here in Western culture, cremation is actually, for the first time ever, has actually gone up, has trumped burial.
Probably because it's cheaper, and probably also because we are running out of space, if I had to guess. I mean,
it's definitely cheaper. It's,
don't they like, in some places, and this freaks me out too, don't they like take some of the graves and then bury other people on top of them that weren't even related? I've heard of that happening before too.
You can do that if it's in your own family, but
I'm saying shady dealings. I'm not talking about sanctioned.
No,
I'm saying
you're
people
right.
doing shady dealings because they're or houses and stuff being built on top of cemeteries. I mean, that's definitely
that.
Happened.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's this one thing, and I don't want to get too far into it, but yes, there's one thing over in, I think it's in China, where there was a burial ground, but since they're running out of space, it was a huge thing, a huge project. They wanted to build a building, you know, housing more than likely, on that burial ground. And what they had to do was dig up all of the people. They had to find the family and get them to consent and all that. And then they got, you know, exhumed, and then they got reinterned into a other location. And there was a really big thing. I don't know. I must have been in the dark annals of the web one night, and I just started reading that. And I was like, oh, wow, this is going on. I mean, that's like just taking my parents where they're buried right now and just saying, you know, we're going to build a shopping mall right here. So, hey, man.
I know.
Do you mind signing here? And if it's okay, we just move them over to, can we cremate them? And you can just kind of keep them in your house. Do you mind? I'm like, are we having this conversation right now?
Yeah, that's a lot to wrap your head around, you know?
You know what I'm saying? I mean, look, we just got finished with the repas and this, and, you know, we're trying to, that,
now
that's
you
still
dig
stuck
them
my
back
memory.
Up.
Right. You know, I was having a barbecue. We were having a good time. And, yeah. and you know, everything was fine and dandy. Now you want to throw this on me? Okay. So every year we have a barbecue. Now we're going to sit in front of my fireplace and look at my folks. I ain't with it. Oh, man. This whole thing got me hungry, man. It's weird. I know. Don't hate me. So speaking of barbecue, let's go to the next thing that we do. So, not we, but things that happen for human beings.
I don't
beings.
Know about
we,
you. The human... I'm not doing this.
We, the human beings. All right. So, let's talk about the next one. So, this one is called sati. And it's also called...
Sati.
Not to be confused with sake that we usually drink warm or cold. Very delicious drink. You usually drink
rice
that.
Wine.
When you're having good old sushi. So, yeah, not that. So, we're talking about sati, also called the widow burning. So, this is most popular in India.
And Nepal.
Oh, Nepal too? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Those are the two main places.
Wait, Nepal is in India. Duh.
No.
Wait, it's not? I got to pull up my globe.
Do it.
So, yes, India and in Nepal. This is where the matriarch or the man in the family. Wait a minute, the matriarch.
Patriarch.
It's a patriarch. Excuse me. So it's where the patriarch.
Papa, mama.
Papa, papi. He passes away, and during that ritual, after during the whole process, when they're burning the individual. The wife, which is alive, knowingly and happy to do so, let's say to speak, throws herself on the pyre and dies with and gets burned up with the person that is going up. Does that sound about right?
Well, I would say that they're not happily doing it.
Oh, yeah. As I say in air quotes, they're not happily doing it. But that's the thing. So part of the morning, the wife decides to throw herself on the funeral pyre and get burned up so they can be together in the afterlife.
That's one theory.
It is one theory. Another theory is where the reason why they used to do that is because not because of the mourning, they want to join each other in the afterlife is another reason why it was said to be done. So the wife wouldn't go ahead and, I can't say cheat, but go ahead and be with her lover after the person is deceased or is gone, right?
Okay.
So that was another thing. So that's why I'm saying the air quotes, hey, look, oh, I'm happy to do this. Oh, I'm going to die now. Well, there's a lot of instances where they were just forced, dragged, and thrown in there to die.
Yep.
Because, okay, you're not going to be with your lover. You're not going to be with whoever else. And you're going to die with this person. So there's a lot of...
It was supposed to be voluntary and considered an act of the signature act of a dutiful wife, we'll say that. And how, the ending of their marriage would play out, right? But...
Till death do us part.
Right. Well, till death we just stay together is really... There's no parting in that.
Not in that one. You're staying together.
Exactly.
Bones and everything.
Yeah. But this wasn't just in India and Nepal. It was seen all over the place, like ancient Egypt, ancient Greece, a whole bunch of ancient China. I know that. And so I think in ancient Egypt, when a pharaoh would die, they wouldn't burn them. So this similar type of death ritual would occur where they would take the wife or the slave women or the servants and just bury them alive with the pharaoh. So this whole thing has been seen and happened in all sorts of different cultures and all over the world. But yes, this particular burning of the widow is most popular in India and Nepal.
And I think it's horrible. It's horrible. But of course, this isn't part of my lifestyle. You know, it just is what it is. But it was really popular in the 1800s. So when it was a southern Indian thing. And it was going on in the 1800s, and then it migrated to northern India. And I read a couple of stories, but one of them happened in the 1950s. So yeah, that was a long time ago when you think about it, but thinking of what this act actually is, that doesn't seem to be that long ago at all. Mm-hmm. And sources are saying that it's still happening to this day. But if it happens now, it's definitely illegal. It is banned. This isn't anything that is okay and happening. Yes, there's different kinds of arranged marriages and all that. That's one thing. Okay, fine. But when it comes to sati, that is banned in India.
Right.
And you can't, and you just can't do that. But there was one account of it happening in the 50s when it comes to a high-level person. And there's a story about that, too. We can put it in the show notes for you guys to read, too.
And people, remember, this particular practice has nothing to do with the Hindu religion at all. It's more of a societal, cultural
that just
thing.
Came up.
Yeah. Yeah. There might be some history with it in, like, mythological stuff, but there's nothing in the Vedic text that say that this is how or this is what a wife or a widow is supposed to do. It literally came out of some kind of like a societal pressure that was put on the women because if they didn't have any surviving children to take care of them, or if they didn't have anybody there, they were then considered like a drag on resources of the community, and they were more so forced into doing this, into killing themselves and burning themselves with the husband, which is crazy. But the families of women that did commit sati were then highly respected. And also, during any of these practices, very, very loud music is played to cover up the sound of, to drown out the sounds of screaming. It's horrendous. Horrendous.
I can't imagine that. I mean, I burn my finger and I'm yelling. Yeah.
Like, for days, you know.
Yeah. Like, it burns.
Exactly. No, but this definitely was so horrendous that people have been trying and had been trying to ban it as far back as like 1500. And there were several officials and emperors and Christian missionaries, and even Queen Victoria at one point tried to attempt to completely ban it. But it just kept continuing to keep happening for whatever reason.
I think one of the pieces of that is what we already talked about earlier is when it comes to, the afterlife. And that's probably how it just, there was some time that people just said that, okay, we're going to join each other in the afterlife. And that was one thing that you could do. And it just kind of turned into that. Obviously, there's no proof, but just kind of turned into that. And that's where a lot of these things are really talking about. It's what happens after. And that's one of them.
I think that this was more so, like I said, it was mainly done because...
Stop cheating.
Nobody wanted to take care of the burdensome woman that was left over after the man died. Because what good is she? Like, it really hits a nerve inside of me. Really does.
Yeah, man. And I don't know. I haven't heard anything of this happening now. I did a little bit of research, but... I'm sure it still happens.
It does. It does. So Nepal officially banned it in 1920. And then there was the India's Prevention Act of Sati in 1987. That's not that long ago, people.
Yeah, not that long ago.
And there's also been at least four instances of this occurring in between the years of 2000 and 2015.
Ridiculous.
Yep.
So I got a serious question for you.
What?
You gonna get burned up?
Hell no.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm sure. Why would I? No. who am I getting burned up for? I don't even have a husband. What are you talking about?
I'm just saying.
There isn't even
a
choice.
I'm just saying, if you had a husband and he passed away, and in mourning you said, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and burn myself. Are you on that list?
I mean, who can say what they want to do when something happens, right? Who knows? Right. But I mean, that makes me think of all the sweet little old people that lose their husband or wife and then... A few months later, they pass away, and they may have been perfectly healthy for an old person, but then they die because it has been linked to broken heart syndrome. That's a real thing.
Yeah, except they're not burning themselves up.
No, yeah, I don't think I would just jump on a pyre. No, no.
All right, just checking.
Would you want your wife to get burned up?
I don't know, man. Awkward silence.
Watch out, Lisa. Your man wants you to jump in the fire.
Yeah. If I die, you die till death.
You coming with me.
You coming with me till death. Oh, man. Yes, this is pretty terrible. If it happens, yes, it is pretty bad. You know, if you think that's bad when it comes to the wives, let's go to the next one. Let's talk about what the Vikings did.
Oh, okay. Yeah. If you think Hindi women had it tough,
they
wait till you hear the story about the slave girls of the Viking noblemen. Good grief. Exactly.
So if there's any children here under 18, you may want to, this might be a PG-13 for you or whatever. You might not want to listen to this one. No, I'm just kidding. All right. So the Vikings, and we all know, we've seen the shows about the Vikings. We all know how violent of a people that they were and so on and so forth. So when it comes to this, how they dealt with the dead, this is one way that they did it. Of course, they had other ones too. It's just one way. And we're just talking about this one.
Yep.
So,
yeah. So the Vikings had several ways that they would deal with their dead. Some were much more theatrical than others. And the one that we're going to talk about is the most theatrical, and it crosses the span of several days and all this stuff going on. So I'm going to read word for word what we have found just to give you a nice idea of what was going on. So just close your eyes and try to envision this in your head, okay? The ritual following the death of a chieftain was exceptionally brutal. Once dead, a chieftain's body was put into a temporary grave for 10 days while new clothes were being prepared for him. During this time, one of his slave girls would volunteer, and I'm doing big old air quotes for the word volunteer, to join him in the afterlife. She was then guarded day and night and given copious amounts of intoxicating drinks. Once the cremation ceremony got started, the girl went from tent to tent, having sex with every man in the village. As the men were having sex with her, or what we today would be calling rape, they would say, "Tell your master that I did this because of my love for him." Following this, the girl was taken to a tent where she had sex with 6 Viking men, was then strangled to death with a rope, and finally stabbed by a village matriarch. And for the coup de grace, the bodies of the chieftain and slave girl were placed on board a wooden ship that was set alight and pushed off to sea. The Vikings did this to ensure that the slave girl would serve her master in the afterlife, while the sexual rites were a way to transform the chieftain's life force.
Okay.
Boom. That's what Take they that. Did in a nutshell. That's very theatrical. What got me is that the final stabbing is by the village matriarch. It's interesting because you would think that all this debauchery happening would be just from the men. Oh, no. There were a lot of women also very actively participating in this and that were just as thrilled to be raping and pillaging and murdering these volunteers.
Pillaging always goes after raping, no matter what it is. Uh-huh. Raping, pillaging.
Exactly.
Yeah, man. Okay.
That's bananas.
So I thought the sati was bad.
Right.
Then we get into this Viking stuff. I mean, that's just savagery right there.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, they're just getting it in. I mean, they're just not even giving a damn.
Right? It's like prolonged episodes of feasting and drinking and music and songs and chants, and then you got the human sacrifice and suicide and rape and sacrificial killing of animals. I mean, all that stuff is going on. Can you just imagine all this in your head with a backdrop of like the ocean, like a beautiful backdrop, or a nice like river or whatever they're doing this by?
Yeah, you hear all the wailing and like, oh, there's celebration, a beautiful backdrop.
Right,
there's a gangbang or in that little tent over there.
yep.
And then there's the lady that just goes, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's terrible.
Yeah, exactly. Man. Yeah, man, I just
so dramatic. The whole thing is so dramatic.
it's part of the rituals, and that's what, you know, we didn't, one thing we're not going to talk about today is what Native Americans did. So I wonder what the indigenous people, I have a good feeling about what they did, and we don't have those examples today, but yeah, I'm just thinking about that, how the backdrop and and all that going on. I was like, man, I wonder what they, I'd be very curious to see what the indigenous people of North America did. And I'll probably do that on my own research too, just because since we're talking about this right now. So, yeah. I mean, once, well, one thing that I don't think that article said, but the reason why that they did that too, they killed the person, put them in with the chieftain, and then they set them off. And one thing that I thought always happened that you got sent off in a ship and then it gets burned. And that's how a lot of that stuff is theatrical when we look at movies and things like that. But sometimes when they did these, they just made the ship and they made something, a rendering of a ship, and it happened on the land.
Yep.
And
then they would bury that.
Right. They would bury it. Sometimes they'd burn it up too. Just a one big pyre, just that too. It wouldn't always just float because.
No, yeah. Hollywood made it, makes it look really, really appealing. And I think that's why it's funny because you see people today like, oh, I want a Viking burial. Like, do you?
Yeah, really? You want to take it? Okay. You want to have one of your slave girls just get raped and pillaged or whatever?
I know. And then strangled to death and then stabbed to death and then, I mean,
yeah,
drugged first.
And yeah, then drinks copious amount
and
of.
And then raped.
Drinks copious amount of.
Crazy.
Ciroc.
Blame it on the Jaeger.
Yeah, you got rain on the Jaeger. So we're going to give you a lot of Jaeger and then we're just going to just. We're going to rape her and then we're going to just stab her.
These people, they're so. Like, it just seems so dramatic, but a lot of the stuff, the reason that they did a lot of these things goes back to what I always say, the pagan rituals. They're very, with this pagan history, but they did a lot of this too because you would think that they're just these big, strong, fearless people, but the one thing they were really afraid of was the dead rising. So they had like a zombie called Dragger, and that's another reason why they would perform a lot of these things in all of these theatrical ways and do these ceremonial rituals because they wanted to make sure that they did everything right to prevent the Viking zombies coming to get them. Sometimes they would chop off the heads and put posts through different parts of the bodies to make sure that the body could not come back together, so to speak, and then rise again and then stalk them. They're terrified of these Viking zombies. Yeah. It's so interesting.
I'm terrified of zombies too, so I must have some Viking in me.
So. Yeah. I don't think anybody really likes zombies.
Look, man, when I'm gone, I'm gone. All right? Just don't go, like, doing things to make me, you know, in this afterlife. When I'm, like, the way I believe, I'm gone. Just don't bother me. Just pour a little liquor out for me. Talk about me. Talk about how funny I was. You know, tell me how great you loved my sex tape when you watched it. You know, and that helped me get famous.
Here we go.
Yeah, I know. Here we go. Sorry. I got to plug. I keep plugging my sex tape. You know, that's my retirement plan.
I think everybody's waiting to see it.
Right. It's a short flick. Anywho. So, after I'm gone, leave me alone. This culture that I'm going to talk about does not do that. So this is called Fama Dihina. So this is off of Madagascar. And for folks that don't know where Madagascar is, it's off of Africa. It's an island off of Africa. Okay. So the Malagasy people of Madagascar, every 5 years or so, the deceased are removed from the crypt. So they're not exhumed. Well, it's exhumation, but they're in a crypt, okay? So they go out there, they take the body out, they dress him or her in new garments, fresh garments, and then the people, it's a celebration, just like we're with your beautiful story of the Vikings, you know? It's a celebration. They're doing all the beautiful
backdrop. Celebration, bitches!
The celebration! We're going to turn these bones!
Why are you in your Reefer Madness voice again?
That's
come
Reefer
on, fellas, we're going to turn the bones! See? Time Ethel, to turn the bones.
George,
it's been 5 to 7 years. It's time to turn the bones, see? Slow down. You're going to kill someone. Oh, they're already dead. We're pulling them out of the tomb. It's time to turn the bones, see?
Jesus. You're right. Every time.
Yeah.
Every time.
You just go into Reefer Madness voice, 1920s or whenever, and I'm like, where's this coming from?
don't know. Everything comes from the 20s. Oh, man. So these folks in the Malagasy people in Madagascar, every 5 years or so, I already said that. So they bring them out, dress them up. They dance with the person. It is a celebration. And then the body is actually turned over and then is put back into the crypt. So if it was face up, then it's face down. That's why I call it turning of the bones. And so when the person first dies, what they want to do, part of the ritual, is to make sure the body decomposes a lot faster.
Mm-hmm.
So when that happens, so it's either hotter temperature, and there's a way that they do that so it decomposes faster, and then they wrap it up, put it inside the crypt. Then every 5 years or so, then they turn the bones, then they have a celebration, and then they put them back in. Like I said, if that happens to me, don't go taking my bones. Don't go doing that. Just let me just be. You can put me in a crypt because that's, you know, that's like player status right there. Build something around me, right? That's fine. Don't burn me up. You know, you could if you want to, but put me in a crypt and that's cool. Just to go taking me out and rattling my bones around and turning them into a guitar, like wind chimes, and do whatever you want to do with the thing and wrap me up.
Wind chimes. Good grief.
Don't do that.
I've actually seen a video of them doing this too.
I've seen a video of this also. And it's weird because you look at the body and it's looking like it's still in one piece.
Sometimes the video I saw, it was not like that at all. It was a very much more, they had been turning the bones for a long, long, long time. So when they were pulling the stuff out, there were people literally picking out bones and whatnot from the compost, basically.
Yeah.
And then taking it out of the old garments or the silks or whatever they're wrapping them in, and then laying them on a new piece of cloth and actually trying to form it again. I remember hearing them say, this is part of the leg, or, you know, something like that. Like, yeah, they're trying to put it back in some kind of sequential shape. Order, right, in a shape. And then when it's all wrapped up and they've then turned the bones,
yeah,
it kind of looks like a rolled up carpet, and then, yeah, they're all just like dancing around. And another thing they do, they write their family's name to make sure that the name is seen and that people aren't forgetting.
Because it looks like a bucket of rocks at this point.
Yeah, they rewrite the names on the fresh cloth so that they'll always be remembered. Yeah. And then they dance the live music while carrying the corpses or just the pieces of bones, like whatever's left. Because this isn't, yeah, something that stops after a certain amount of time. This is something that goes on and on and on.
Somebody always trying to wake me up. That's what I was. Somebody always trying to wake me up. You see, that's what I can't stand that.
They also believe that the soul or the spirit isn't fully transitioned. I think this is why when you said they want it to decompose faster.
Yeah.
They don't believe that the soul is fully transitioned until it's completely, completely, completely decomposed. Gone.
Which is going back to the Tibetans too. Same thing. If it's not completely consumed, then,
well, they thought that was bad
luck. Connotation. Yeah, negative connotation.
This doesn't have a negative connotation. This is just, they'll just keep turning, 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 basically composting every 5 to 7 years until it's gone. But they'll still then keep the ash or whatever's left in those cloths, and they'll still remain in the crypt with the names on them.
Nasty.
It's wild.
No, it's very interesting, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you see this stuff, and again, like, the stuff that we've gone through and seen plenty of funerals in different ways and all that, and yeah, I've seen different renditions of Western stuff, but this is just on some next level type stuff. I mean, they're just...
You know, we talked about the repast, right? And that's, yeah, how we gather and celebrate in that one little moment. This culture in Madagascar, when they do this...
There's a repast pass. Yeah.
Exactly. It's a repass every 5 to 7 years. They're just continuing to come back around and do it all over again.
It's just,
and it just kind of brings together the family and friends and brings together even maybe even lost family members. You know what I mean? So
it's just a party.
I can see how it would be moving in a lot of ways. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. And that kind of brings us similarities or differences when it comes to East versus West, or we'll just say that, or us versus the other ones too. So I think that we just kind of, okay, you're gone. We bury you or cremate you, whatever, and then you're gone. Set it and forget it. See you later.
Yeah, yeah. You mean our relationship, our culture's relationship with the dead compared to pretty much every other culture in the world. I feel like
we're out there. We're just kind of like the, I mean, yes, we do things here too. So there are some similarities. Yeah. Okay. It's a stretch for me to say, okay, well, no one's going to be turning my bones and all that. No one's going to be shaking my urn and all that. So that's
always it's time to bring old man Seth off the mantle. Let's shake up that urn.
Let's shake that urn. Let's shake things up. I know he's with us.
Turn you into a pair of maracas.
We're just so different. Other cultures are more hands-on. So what do you think? I mean, you agree that they're more hands-on than we are? And I'm putting the air quotes, too. I'm like, hands-on? Yeah, like
definitely, we are less hands-on in every which way. We're more internalized and private, I think. We just handle things way differently in our culture compared to pretty much everywhere else.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I don't want to say that we are more out of sight, out of mind, but kind of is. It's like our culture, we're so pressured to quickly get over our grief. Like, well, so-and-so's been gone for this, like, why aren't you over yet? But you know what I mean? Like, we have a whole different relationship with mourning and grieving. And I feel like, to me, it seems like all these other cultures have this ongoing interaction with the dead, which in a way, you know, not only brings them together, but also alleviates some of the grief, I think. It just seems that way.
Yeah, I think so too. And you know what? Because, you know, we do little things. It's not as hands-on, just like you said. You know, we do little things. Like me, I might look at pictures and do, you know, that's how we remember people. We might have a cookout. And we'll say we're going to do this. We might have some kind of a foundation or something regarding a person. So that's how we remember people. And it's not as hands-on. Yes, it's hands-on in where you get active in a community or you do things that this person used to like or blah, blah, blah. Yes, that is hands-on. But when it comes to actually physically being with the person and doing things like turning up the bones, that's the easiest thing I can really say right now. Like, yeah, that's some serious hands-on stuff right there.
Totally. I mean, we handle things way different. And I think that if we had some kind of thing set up in our culture where we did have some kind of every so often expectation of doing this and gathering together, not a forced thing, but something that was more culturally implemented in our society, I feel like it would help alleviate a lot of the grief. And not only that, but I mean, then you are kind of looking forward to celebrating life again with the people that are still here. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because
like I said in the beginning, how hard is it to try to get everybody back together again after that initial repast? It's damn near impossible most of the time. So if we had some kind of something set up where we were like, we're doing this every so often, you better show up. You know what I mean? Like, it's culturally expected of you to show up.
Yeah, we're going to come here. This is going to be our memorial service every year, the second. Some people do that. Some people do, like, friends do, like, a yearly thing. It's like, okay, we're going to do this every year.
Yeah, sometimes.
Because, you know, my cousin did that for one of his friends, that they would do a snowboarding trip every year, you know, because that's what this person did. And I'm not sure if they still do that or not, but that's what they do. So yeah, it's like that. But this is more of it gets ingrained over generations. That's what you're saying, right? It's kind of like, okay, we're going to do this every single year. Why? Because it's what my daddy did. And it's what my daddy's daddy did. Mm-hmm. And this is what I'm going to do. So when I die, you're going to turn my ashes into maracas and then you're good. And then we're going to eat guacamole and we're going to have a Mexican. We're going to have a Hispanic themed thing. Why? Because I don't know why. This is what my daddy did. This is what my daddy's daddy did.
Right.
So,
I mean, death has always been a really critical moment for the bereaved. And consequently, death can be surrounded sometimes by taboo-like rules. Yeah. And family life has to be reorganized in order to master these transitions, right? And so people use these rites, like, well, all the things we've been talking about, people use these rites. All of these rituals and ceremonies are transitional rites, and they're all intended to give the deceased peace in his or her new situation and at the same time provide strength for the bereaved to carry on with their lives. I think that's really important for everybody to remember. Anybody that's listening and thinking, that sounds absolutely crazy what they're doing, or, you know what I mean? Before you judge, just keep that in mind, that what they're doing, there's intention behind it. And most of it is good intention.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what it is. I mean, you know what? There is good intention, and we just have to be open-minded about these things. You know? Yeah. It's funny that you want to turn my ashes into maracas. I mean, that's cute. You know, I mean, what's your exit plan? I mean, what's your exit strategy? What are you going to do?
What's my exit strategy?
Yeah, well, okay, that doesn't sound right. Like, what's your exit strategy? Like,
there are so many alternative choices to just being buried. First of all, like we already mentioned in this podcast, we're running out of space, people. Population is getting out of control. We're running out of space for burial, and I think that's, again, why a lot of people are choosing cremation, besides being cost-effective or whatever. But just take those two main things out of your head. There's so many alternative choices for what to do. So don't shuffle off your mortal coil without making plans for your meat sack, is what I got to say. Just, there's so many choices.
I got plans. I have a couple things. And there's a list here that I have that I think is going to be pretty special, and it's going to bring some light to some things. Like, for me, I think that I have moved from wanting to be buried in a traditional Western style. I think I want to be cremated now.
I always did, to be honest. I always wanted to be cremated because the thought of being in a box just decomposing like that, always, it didn't sit right with me for whatever reason.
I made a change. I don't know how long ago, but yeah, I made a change. I said, you know what? I don't need to be, you don't need to do all this stuff for me. It's probably because the amount of funerals that I went to and looking at all the things and then burying both my parents too. That was the thing. I was like, why do we need all of this? You know, and I've gone to, like we said in the beginning of this podcast, right? You know, I've been to over 10. Okay. So I've been to ones where people are cremated. All right. I go to one that's just a celebration of life, and that's still a funeral, you know, it's a celebration of life, funeral, still the same thing. I've gone to ones where it's been traditional, and it's just an urn there, not a casket.
Yep.
And I've had to make the choices of what I'm going to do with both of my parents. Okay, we're going to bury this person, or are we going to cremate them? And trust me, the cost is way different from doing the both, from doing either or. I mean, both my parents were buried, but and not cremated, but doing the cremation, I'm like, it's kind of cost effective. I mean, I'm not going to be
very cost effective. Very cost effective. And I would say better for the environment.
No, 100%. 100%. So now there's a movement now to green burials. So if you don't know what a green burial is, you can choose to be buried in a more green method. So one of the things that you can do, you can not be embalmed. There's a lot of harsh chemicals when it comes to embalming fluid. It's not just one thing. It's a multitude of things. But if you want to do it the green way, you can do it and be, I can't say sustainable.
Actually, yes, you can be sustainable. You can, there's a thing where you can actually compost yourself. This is a legit thing. You can get a suit made from mushrooms and compost yourself.
Oh, I did see that. Yeah, that's the turn to a mushroom.
Yeah. So your body goes in this suit that's made of mushrooms, and then that is then buried either in a biodegradable coffin or no container at all. And I think the whole suit itself is like $1,500. And you just compost yourself. Compost.
And then you can eat me later. Endocannibalism.
I mean, yeah, I feel like definitely rules and regulations to this where people can just, I mean, you can't just, it's not like a hamster, you can just bury it in your backyard, right? So I'm curious to see where this type of alternative method would be allowed.
True.
Like, where can you get a mushroom suit and bury yourself? curious.
I saw that too.
Or you just keep a hand of mushroom sacks on hand, like, just in case.
Just in case I die, I'm just going to throw this powder, or this mushroom, or whatever. What do they call it? Microbacillia, or whatever they call this stuff. I don't know what they call it. But like, yeah, what is that? Just put me in the ground, all right? And, you know, there'll be some mushrooms. Somebody will eat me. So yeah, so if you want to be sustainable, you can do that. You can also be, if you want to be buried, you can actually be put inside of a coffin that's made out of natural materials. So it can just be wood and without having any kind of metal or anything like that too. So you can absolutely do
that. So that would also biodegrade. Yep.
So that is a green way to actually do it. So yes, you cannot be embalmed. You can, and then you can be put inside of a coffin made of natural materials that do break down. So it could be pine or something. And some of these harder woods take longer to break down. So you can choose the type of wood that you actually want. So
some of them never, some of the ones that people choose never break down.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. And if it's a hardwood, cherry, something like that, it'll take a very, very long time. And there's also things in it. So when you go, yes, you can actually just be put, I'm gone, put me in a suit, which will break down over time. Yeah, he out. You, the suit will break down.
Get the mushroom suit.
Yeah, put you in the mushroom suit. Oh, man.
Another green way is you can be planted and grow into a tree. And the way they do that is they take your cremated remains called cremains, and they put it in this little urn type thing that then can be planted and then grow into a nice, beautiful tree. I think that sounds lovely.
Yeah, that's a really good one, too. I like that.
The urn is also biodegradable, I must add. So all these are we're talking about the green ways.
Right. So you would be cremated. There is a cost to that. But then you could be put inside this urn. And if you're thinking about your exit strategy, your exit plan, how you want to die, or not die, but be taken care of when you die. So one of them is called thelivingurn.com. You can go there. Your ashes can be put into a box, and then you can be and you can actually even pick the tree that you want to be part of.
Yeah, I think that's really cool.
One of the ones that I actually kind of like this one. You can be part of a coral reef.
Yeah, that's dope.
That's another one too. So this one is, well, the website that I saw. There's plenty, but there's one. So eternalreefs.com. Fun fact, those of you that are in Maryland, like Colleen and I are, they actually have a location that you can get buried and be part of a coral reef in Ocean City, Maryland. So if you like Ocean City that much, you can go out and then you'll be put into a urn and then put into it's more of a concrete urn. So you get your own urn and then they put into this form. It's a very hard, like, concrete form.
It's like a brick.
Yeah, it's basically a brick, but it's shaped in
it's shaped like those, like, a triangle, little things that you would put in your fish tank.
Yeah, it's
what you know, and to look like a coral reef, and then it would grow too. It would then grow.
So you can be put out there, and you can absolutely do that. And when I was going through this website, I kind of got a little choked up because I actually seen some of these pictures, and I was like, man, I was like, you know, this is really, because you go there, it's a whole process. So you go there, and day one, you take the ashes. Well, your family takes your ashes, and they mix them up into part of the concrete. Then they have the form. Then the next day, you can come back and you can put some things on it on the outside of it. You can put seashells in there. You can put things, if you are part of the military, you can put, you know, other parts of, I'm not saying trinkets, but other things that remind you of the person. Day three, then you actually go out, and it's not only your family, there's other people. So you go out, you charter a boat, and they take you out, and you have to go at least 3 miles out from shore. So 3 miles out into the ocean from Ocean City, go out there, and you know, you can say nice things, and they drop you overboard. And then what's supposed to happen is, and which does happen too, other wildlife, aquatic life comes over, and they start taking up space where inside the urn, inside the concrete thing. Yeah, they make a home, and then you can absolutely kind of give back. That sounds awesome on our end, and how different is that from the way that your bones get scattered on top of the mountainsides of Tibet, and then the buzzards come eat you, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely giving back in some way sounds really cool. And I know that with the reefs, you don't have to give the entirety of the cremains to do it. So say someone you loved has passed and they wanted to do this, but you still wanted to save some ashes. You don't have to give all of it over.
Right.
You can still, I'm just throwing that out there.
Right. So if you like that whole idea, yes, you can totally do that. But then you can keep some for the put on top of the fireplace. You can totally do that. Or turn into
Something else.
Maracas.
Exactly. Or into that. Jewelry or diamonds. I mean, I've seen all sorts of stuff where people can get turned into all sorts of things. A paperweight, a jewelry. Right. It's like jewelry. Blown glass. There's all sorts of things.
There's a lot of stuff that people are doing now when it comes to that. Because it's just ashes. You can do a lot of stuff with ashes. You can turn it into anything that you want to be. I mean, shoot. Yep.
Exactly. So other things that you can choose to do with your body having to do with, say, scientific purposes. You can donate your body, as we all know, to medical educational programs.
Okay.
You can donate your body to be part of a body farm. Have you heard of a body farm, Seth?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm in the true crime.
Forensic anthropology type stuff.
I'm in all that stuff, so I totally know about that.
Yeah, so people that don't know, that'd be where you donate your body. And there are like 7 of these body farms in the United States, I believe, and your body would then be put out. And that's where people then go and they learn on these training grounds, and your body's just used as basically a prop, so to speak.
Absolutely.
Another thing you can do for scientific purposes is donate your body to the Body Worlds exhibit, which is really cool. That's when you get your body filled up with plastic. Have you heard of that?
No. Sounds weird.
All the body's water and fats are replaced with plastics, which means that your body doesn't decay and it's totally preserved and it can even be touched. Yeah. I've seen this because I've gone to a Body Worlds exhibit several years ago. They're holding the exhibit in Baltimore at the Inner Harbor.
Okay.
And I was in school at the time for anatomy stuff and whatnot. And I was like, I got to go to this because it's right up my alley for the things that I'm learning.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. It was a little freaky. Because you're in this exhibit and you're surrounded by all these bodies that look like fake mannequins or whatever, but they're all real dead people that have been plastinated.
I'm out. I can't.
But they use it for learning purposes. It's not just like, oh, come look at this dead body. It's for learning purposes to show different diseases, what it does to the body. There's a reason behind it. So that's just another way. If you're really into science and you want to give your body back for medical purposes, that's another thing to consider.
Duly noted. Like I said, once I'm gone, I'm gone. I don't want people looking at me. They'll be turning my bones. They'll be doing none of that stuff. All right. So there's one that I know you want to talk about. Let's talk about that one. Do you want to talk about the going out with a bang?
You can get launched into outer space.
How about one that if I don't want to go into space, if I just want to go high?
You could be a biodegradable balloon.
Not quite thinking that.
Where you go up about 30,000 feet and the balloon freezes and it bursts, scattering your ashes. There's that option. You don't want to be launched into space.
I got one that's kind of more like if I want to kind of go out with a bang.
Oh, yes. You can get turned into fireworks.
Hey-o! And the rocket's red glare!
For your grand finale, you can get turned into fireworks and let a dazzling light show launch you into the heavens.
Yep. So this place, and
love fireworks.
I love fireworks, too. You know what? This actually might be my choice. So, look. This is not in the United States. This is in the UK. So if you want to be turned into, your ashes turned into a fireworks display for all your friends to eat, drink, and be merry, and then end with boom,
bang.
You in there. So you can go to heavenlystarsfireworks.com. It's in the UK. Well, there's actually another one. That's one in the UK.
There's a couple of companies. Yeah. I don't know if they're allowing people to do it in the US yet. I think they are. I don't know. There's all sorts of rules and regulations with these things, but you can definitely find a place to do it. If you're like, I love fireworks, I must go out with a bang. You can do it.
You can do it.
And the packages, some of them aren't even that expensive. And again, this is another option where you don't have to hand over all of the cremains. You can hand over partial cremains that then get included into the fireworks explosion. And then you can just poof into the air.
I'm trying not to laugh when we're talking about this, but yeah. I mean, for real.
They have ones that you can do like a big, huge fireworks display, like we think of 4th of July, like something that grandiose. But they also have ones that what are the ones called that you just buy on the side of the road and just like shoot off in your backyard?
Bottle rockets?
Something like that. They have smaller ones that you can do that too. So if you can't afford the big one, you can just get a little pew, right, just a little yeah, and then it's over. Just the one little pap.
Yeah, that's when you that was when you couldn't quite afford that.
Right.
So can't yeah, afford you can totally
the thousands
do
of dollars for the big display. You can do a little backyard handheld.
Which is actually even more intimate, let's just say.
Yeah,
that.
I think so. Intimate. I agree.
If everybody gets their own bottle rocket.
But what if it doesn't go off right?
It's a dud.
Right. Can you imagine the expectations? Everybody's sitting around waiting. They're like, here it comes, Johnny. And they're like wiping tears out of their eyes and then just fizzles out. Like, dang it.
Oh, it's a dud. You know what?
Dang it.
I know. I always thought he was a dud. I knew he wasn't going to be nothing in life. Even to death, he still never accomplished anything.
He was such a disappointment. I knew it.
I knew he always, even in death, he's right. Still a disappointment.
Exactly. Everybody just turns around all upset and walks away like, yeah. I'm going home.
How about those ravens?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay.
That's
oh,
funny.
Man. So.
So you say you're going to choose to get cremated and then to be a firework display?
I choose cremated. It may be a combination of fireworks. Yeah, cremation and fireworks. I think that could be my choice if they allow that in the United States.
Yeah, see, that's the cool thing. If you choose cremation, you can do several things.
Yeah.
You can choose all of these things. You can be all sorts of things.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, if my girlfriend really wants to mourn me for real, I mean, she can have me have the, like a fireworks for some people. She can have my urn. She can get me turned into a freaking necklace thing instead of getting my name on rice. She'll get like me put into like
name on rice.
You remember those? You get your name on rice.
They were amazing. I was like, how do people write that tiny?
How do they do that? They're like little people that do that.
Tiny little people.
I want that.
Commissioned to write on rice.
So, all right. So, you know what?
So you're going to choose cremation, fireworks, and possibly, what was the other one?
I don't know. I have so many choices. I like the reef. I like the tree.
Yeah, the reef. Yep.
I would probably choose reef. There's a lot involved with that. I'm not sure if my family would be doing all that because it is a process. So I'll definitely be cremated.
Look, if it's something that you want, you just write it and then your wishes will be.
Well, I want my girlfriend to throw herself on my funeral pyre. I want her to burn herself up. That's
messed up.
I mean, that's,
I wouldn't let her do it.
That's my ride or die, bitch.
Just me and my bitch. Just
all right, what are your choice? What are your choices? Or what is your choice, baby?
Choices, plural, because with all these choices, I would definitely pick more than one. So cremation for sure.
Okay.
I would then definitely want to be turned into a tree somewhere. Some
awesome
beautiful
choice.
Tree. Okay, go on. I think it would be fun to be fireworks because I love fireworks.
And then
for the pièce de résistance, I want to be turned into a vinyl record.
Because you were a player?
I ain't a player, I just crush a lot.
Yeah,
no,
you've been a player your whole life and you're still going to play in the afterlife.
No, this is real. This is a for real legit thing. You can get your ashes pressed into a playable vinyl record with audio of your choice. There's a company in the UK, again, there's probably somebody doing it here in the US, but you can do that. It's like sprinkles the ashes in there. And you know the crackling and pop sound that you might hear from dust settling on a vinyl mm-hmm. record that you play? That's actually what you will hear in this vinyl record, and it's the little pieces of the ashes. So every time you hear a crackle or pop, it's like you're connecting with the person who's passed.
Man, that's some scary shit. I'm not doing that.
But you can have a recording of somebody's music, like say they're a musician and they wanted to have their own music put on there, or you can have their favorite song, or you can have just them speaking. So say you had some recording of someone speaking you wanted to put on there, or it could just be silent. Like there's all these choices. It's pretty cool.
I think it's pretty creepy. If it was silent, that's just creepy as hell.
Yeah, I wouldn't do silent. I would pick some. But see, that's the thing. Like, I want to do this, but then you asked me what songs I would pick. I have no friggin' idea.
Yeah.
There's too many good ones.
I know what song I would pick.
What was it?
Move something.
You need to get up right now and move with this. Yes, this means you. You.
Yes. I love it.
That's what it would be on your record.
I think of you every time I hear that. And so if it was my choice, if you were my woman and that was your request, you want to be turned to some vinyl, I would pick that. That's, and I'd find a record player somewhere, I guess. And then
that's the easy part.
Right.
Oh, wow.
Oh, man, good, good, good. I love that. I love going out. I totally forgot about being turned to a record. Yeah, there's so many things you can do with that.
Mm-hmm.
So now we picked our exit strategies and what we want to turn into. So why don't we exit this podcast?
Yeah. You got any shout outs today?
I don't have any shout outs. I think that...
You got nothing nice to say to anybody?
Actually, I do. I'm kidding. All right. So shout out to the continuing...
Shout out to France, y'all. Yeah.
I totally forgot. I always... What am I talking about? Oh, man. I'm a terrible person. Man, shout out to France, man.
Shout out to France. You're always, that's what you always say.
Man, shout out to France, young.
Yeah. Cliche.
Cliche in the building.
I say that when in doubt, Seth, if you cannot think of a shout out, just say shout out to France.
Yeah, that's my go-to. Shout out to France, young. Cliche is in the building. They're in there. I love them. Thank you very much for that. Also, shout out to... all the folks that are continuing to listen to the podcast. And I put out a message about one of our last podcasts that is slated to be one of our most downloaded. People started listening and seeing what all the fuss is about. So I really appreciate that. I'm seeing all these new likes all of the time. Colleen is doing a lot of networking and getting more in touch with the podcast community. So she's really reaching out and doing a lot of work for us, actually. Us meeting me and the rest of our listeners. She's doing it for herself too. So, you know, shout out to Colleen also. She's really really good job with reaching out to everybody. And that's why I'm looking at all those likes, different parts of the day, different parts of the night. Get all these new likes and new listeners that I don't even know. And that's what it's all about. So, you know, shout out to Cliche, shout out to Colleen, and shout out to new listeners that are listening in and liking our podcast. So those are my shout outs, baby. You got any shout outs?
Yeah, I want to mention that we have reached 750 downloads now. We jumped up from 500 just in a couple weeks, which is pretty cool, again, for newbie podcasters that don't have this big cult following or whatever. So that's really, really good. And I just wanted to say a nice shout out to all the people that I've been having. I've just been loving these personal conversations that I've been having and getting feedback about the show, especially with our super fans. I'm gonna call them super fans. We love you guys.
Yeah, and shout out, yeah, so our super fans, great. You know, I love you guys. Thank you so much. And also the upcoming Airheads.
Yep.
I really appreciate that.
Also, two more people have donated to support our show on buymeacoffee.com. You said one of them was Lisa, correct?
Lisa did. Lisa Wolf. Lisa Wolf is one of our newest ones on Buy Me a Coffee. Shout out to you, Lisa.
Thank you so much, Lisa. That's like, we really appreciate that. And there was an anonymous donator as well. I have no idea who you are. So, mystery listener, thank you very much.
It's probably Chopper.
Chopper coming to get you and give you 7 coffees on buymeacoffee.com.
Chopper's super creepy. All right, Colleen, bring us home, baby.
So thank you guys so much for listening and spending time with us today. Please don't forget to subscribe to our show so you don't miss out on any future episodes. If you have a question, a comment, or an episode idea, or if you just want to drop us a line to say hello, you can reach us on Facebook and Instagram at Air Candy Podcast, or send an email to aircandypodcast@gmail.com. So hit us up because we want to connect with you. And until next time, peace.
Peace. Bye-bye. Oh, boy.
And cut.
Let's do it.
Once dead, a chief's...
You know, you're always wasting all your breath. So, you know, let me just try to run this one. Let me steer the wheels. All right? I'm steering the wheel.
Today, he's the head host. I forgot to write down what we were going to be talking about. Because it's not my show.
I do what I want. I do it.
Today.
Sorry, that just came out. No, I threw good. You off. I'm so sorry,
no,
baby.
No, it's good. But before we get into that, new episodes of Air Condi. Good night.
Sorry, we'll start over.
Good job, Wiener.
You're right. Yeah. Good job, Wiener. Good job, Wiener.